Hey, Deaf and Dog gives a fascinating interview with Al and Emma Gentel, members of this year's Youth Hostel program. Al was stationed here over 50 years ago during World War II. Take it away, Kay.
Hi, this is Kay Deffendahl here for another segment of Ion in Alaska. It's finally good to be back. And we're here with Al and Emma Gentel, right?
Correct.
And you're from?
From Hoover, Alabama, near Birmingham.
And also Gulf Shores. That's right. They wonder how in the world that I got up here from Tennessee. So my goodness, you from Alabama. Now, this isn't your first time being here, though, is it?
No, I was a guest of Uncle Sam here in 1943-44 till September of 45.
Oh, my goodness, that was a long time.
It was.
Yeah.
I arrived, as I recall, somewhere around July, August of 43. So many things happened here, and many stressful moments, and many days of just being pure lonesome.
Yeah.
I left after the war. I was declared essential, and I worked for an admiral, and also there was a commander of a submarine squadron, as well as a fleet air wing. Then later on, they moved them all out to ADAC. But in the beginning, we had the commander of the North Pacific here, as well as a general who I understand what we all know was killed at Okinawa, Simon Bolivar Buckner, who was an unusual person. And as you and I talked prior to this interview, I could tell you an interesting anecdote.
I want to talk about it now. He lived in Unalaska,
we called it different things,
some of them not so nice, I'm sure.
Well, that's right. And so sometimes we said Unalaska, sometimes we said Unalaska, but we didn't know, and there wasn't anybody over there to tell us. But he lived up this valley, and I think when I was out riding around with a friend, Matthew Taylor, who kind of took me under his arm and adopted me, mm-hmm. and showed me some of the sites that I knew about since I've come back. Well, he pointed out the general's former home, which is up on that hill, and all that's left is a chimney.
Right.
The interesting thing about him, he liked fresh milk. Now, the story was that maybe he had stomach ulcers, and you would see this soldier walking this cow.
Right.
So we all would have to come over, and you would see the soldier walking the cow in the morning.
Yeah.
And I presume that soldier fed him and milked him for the general.
Sure. Yeah.
But it was a very interesting but long 2 years.
Yeah,
here.
I could imagine what that. You know, what did you do in the war, Daddy? And this soldier has to tell his kids, I walked the general's cow. I don't know.
But much history, I think, came out of that command post. It was a joint command post.
Now that's another thing you were telling me, that the command post was on the Dutch Harbor side.
Oh, yes.
And over by what is now the Delta Western or Chevron fuel dock.
That's correct.
Now, I didn't realize that you were telling me there's a building that's still standing over there.
That's correct.
That was the actual command post.
That's right.
From there, by the fuel tanks up
correct.
On the hill.
Currently, there's some fuel tanks.
Mm-hmm.
But as you scale that hill, up at the very top, there's still a signal tower, which at one time had a signal light and halyards for flags to signal the ships as they came into Dutch Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a view straight out from there.
Yeah.
And down through the bowels of that hill, immediately below the signal tower and adjacent underground, was a message center, two rooms about 50 feet long. We must have had as many as 15 radio operators in there at a time. It was a big hub of activity. And then from there, we had an underground tunnel that went to a joint command post, which was underneath a building that still stands. The building itself was the offices of the general and the admiral, and later on the commandant of the naval operating base, because as I indicated, the admirals and the generals went to ADAC.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I arrived to Dutch Harbor was from ADAC, I came in at Act Two, and then after the engagement, I was at ADAC, as I mentioned, and I flew here.
Mm-hmm.
I saw them build the runway at ADAC. They diverted a stream and laid a mesh, iron mesh.
Really?
And I actually flew off of that mesh.
Oh.
While they really weren't waiting to send me until after the mesh was built, but it was there. And this was quite a hub of activity. There were lots of people here.
Well, I know I've heard estimates as much as 60,000 troops on this island. You think that's correct?
Well, I wasn't privy to that information, but right here where we sit now, there was a Fort Mears.
Right.
Had many barracks.
Mm-hmm.
There were many soldiers in the hills, and there are many bunkers in Quonset huts and others buried. There was an underground hospital not too far from here.
Mm-hmm.
As to the numbers of people, I don't know, but it was a very large number.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you were stationed here for over a year then? What,
2 years. As I say, I arrived around July of August of 43 and left it. Yeah. September the 16th, I think it was.
So you saw some of the, well, of course, we were bombed, in 42. But there were other scrapes and all that.
Well, we were being in the hub of it all. We were aware of what was happening, even though I did not decode the messages.
Mm-hmm.
We also copied press and we put out information. A little newspaper called the Dutch Harbor News.
Mm-hmm.
So we collected the information and gave it to public relations, and they in turn made a little paper.
Oh.
But all the news came out of that little command post.
Right.
Also. While we were in that command post, we picked up a message an Army troop ship broke in two up north of us here.
Really?
We were able to get people in, and they brought both pieces back to Dutch Harbor. And they didn't lose any soldiers. And we received a message when the USS Comfort was kamikaze attacked. We picked up the message off Okinawa. So there was many exciting moments.
Mm-hmm.
We knew what was happening in the war because we were getting the messages up here. And it would be fed back to us, and then we copied press and gave that information mm-hmm. to public relations.
Wow. Now, what did you do on your off time?
The off time, I would hike up Ballyhoo Mountain over to Unalaska, and go over there. Used to be a little flat barge that ran along a cable at the very narrowest point. You can see remnants of it now, and it came in by the processing plant. There are two ships out there now, but right about where that processing plant is was the other end of that little ferry.
Yeah.
We would come over and we'd walk around and wonder who were the people that lived in these little houses, because they were not there.
They were gone then.
They had evacuated them.
Yeah.
Right as my elders told me when I got here, that right after the bombing,
mm-hmm.
they were actually here.
Yeah.
From what I understand.
Right.
And then right after the bombing, they evacuated them like June 5th, 6th of 42, rather hurriedly, from what I understand.
Yes, they sure did.
They were gone, and I saw them begin to trickle back, before I left.
Mm-hmm.
In the latter part, early spring of 45, the very first thing I recall being open was a bar over there.
Probably the Elbow Room.
the Blue Fox, I think it was
called. Oh, that was what it was called then?
Well, that was a different bar. I thought it might be the Elbow Room. Everybody told me it was the Elbow Room. But I went in there today to look, and I didn't remember that.
Okay.
And then I mentioned that, and they said, well, there was another one around the corner. It was called the Blue Fox.
Oh,
and I said it was the Blue Fox.
Okay.
And the most remarkable thing about the Blue Fox was that the only thing they had to serve was tequila.
Oh my gosh.
And then there was some other people came in and they opened up a restaurant and they had real eggs.
Oh, I bet that was a treat.
It was.
Real eggs, where did they get them?
I don't know, off the merchant ships, I guess.
Yeah.
But we've been eating powdered eggs that smelled like sulfur. And they were green. And the food was the best. They said we were eating horse meat, but of course they were probably people elsewhere eating worse. So we never said much about it.
Now, you also mentioned green beer, that as young GIs and all these sailors here.
There was a beer hall. It's too bad it's gone, but there was a mural on the wall of this sailor, and his head was shaped like a wolf.
And
then had a very beautiful lady drawn, and there were quite a varied group of people here, and some of them were very artistic. And, and on different walls and different locations, there used to be paintings where they would paint things.
Mm-hmm.
And this was an excellent painting in the beer hall.
Yeah, yeah.
And the powerhouse.
Now, have you been over there yet?
Well, only on the outside, but we had transmitters on the third floor of that powerhouse. That's where our power came from.
Okay.
We had two locations with transmitters. One was behind the brick building, which was the chief petty officer quarters. And later on, I became a chief petty officer here
mm-hmm.
And lived in that house that as brick, and then was a radio station behind there, which I understand when they bombed, they did hit, and they killed some sailors around there, from what I understand.
Yeah.
My elders told me.
Yeah.
But the transmitter site, we maintained that one too. So we had transmitters at the powerhouse on the top floor, and transmitters there. And we had antennas over on Hog Island, and antennas back behind there, transmitter.
Yeah.
Receiving antennas were on top of the command hill.
Yeah, there's still stuff on Hog Island.
Yes.
All the towers and stuff.
So. Right. We also worked with the planes off of out of the tower on the airstrip.
So you left here in 45 and...
And went back to Alabama.
Went back to Alabama, and were you married at that time?
No,
or you went back home and found her?
I actually, I didn't even see any ladies for a long time until I did leave here. We did see some, Olivia de Havilland, and we saw Joe Louis Box and Errol Flynn.
Came
and
here?
Bob Hope. Yes, they came here.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes, and I sat across the table from Olivia de Havilland. She was a beautiful little lady. Had excellent perfume.
Yes, I'm sure you would remember that.
But I went back to Alabama, and I studied electrical engineering at Auburn University, War Eagle. That was our battle call. Then I went to work for Bell South in communications, and ultimately retired from Bell South on the executive staff, and took an early retirement, and began to travel. And little did I know that I would ever come back to Dutch Harbor.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. How did you find out about this elder hostel, how did you find out about coming back?
One morning I was reading the elder hostel newspaper. We had never participated in the elder hostel, but we have traveled all over the world with a group called the Friendship Force, which is an international cultural exchange organization, like the elder hostel, but you live with the people.
Yeah.
Well, I was reading the paper one morning, the elder hostel paper, and I read Alaska, Dutch Harbor, and I said, I can't believe. I always wanted to go back and see Dutch Harbor and show Emma Dutch Harbor. So I found out about it, and I wrote in about it, and I eventually even called Jarrah. I talked to somebody here at the hotel, and I said, hey, you know, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And so I was delighted when they selected us to come.
Yeah.
And the people I have found in this town of Unalaska and Dutch Harbor are the friendliest people.
We are, aren't we?
Oh, they're so friendly.
We are. That's because most of us are from somewhere else, you know, and we know what it's like.
Well,
to be here.
Even the ones who probably were Aleuts or natives or whatever, born and bred, everybody I've met is friendly.
Yeah, they are. We're all a very friendly bunch of people. So
I can see why people come back. They say that some of them come back.
You just never hardly ever get out of here, you know. Well, so when you flew in, what'd you think whenever you...
I was all excited, and I wanted Emma to see. You know, a lot of times you want somebody else to see what you have been always telling them about. So I was glued to the window, and I was looking for a familiar thing, and Priest Rock is what I recognized.
Everybody always.
I saw Little Priest.
Yes.
Then I was also remembering when I left. I didn't have much notice. They told me that when the war was over, I could choose my own duty. By this time, as I say, I was a chief and primarily a radio operator, and I wanted more technical training, so I went to a technician school. And I remember when I left, I was looking out, and so I was looking and reflecting back how I flew out. When I flew in from ADAC, I don't remember much about that, but I remember when I flew out.
Why?
Because I had been here all that time, and I was on my way home.
Ready, yes.
And as we flew across in a DC-3, it was a DC-3, which is a small plane, and flies low and slow. I recall the Valley of 10,000 Smokes, and we flew low enough that I could see it. So as we returned, I passed a message up to the pilot of this 737 to slow down to about 150 or 200. Let's see if we can see the Valley of 10,000 Smokes.
Yeah.
I think that's the correct name. The message came back that the valley stopped, the the 10,000 smoke stopped puffing about 20 years ago.
Oh.
And so, and by the way, we just went by it.
Oh. Well, maybe going out it'll be clear and you can talk to the pilot before you start out.
Well, yeah, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
So, yes, it was quite an exciting moment returning.
I bet it was.
I looked to see if the terminal buildings looked the same. There was one building there that looks familiar, the old tower.
Right.
Although they're taking the top off of
it.
It
was there until just a few years ago.
So oh, really?
It hadn't even gone too long.
Well, that tower, I was familiar with that because we had radio people into the second level. And there were others up there directing traffic, but we had some receivers in there too, and they would talk with the planes.
Yeah.
And as I left here, I asked a guy who was with this Navy Transport Command. They flew from ADAC here, not me specifically, but others too. Did he need a relief on the radio? And he said, well, I wouldn't mind taking a break. And so when I got on there, the war was over, and I didn't worry. I tuned in on the frequencies that I knew the guys would be listening. And I spoke to them and told them goodbye.
Oh, really? Never thinking that you'd ever see this place again.
No, I have not seen them either.
Yeah. Well, that's neat. We're so glad that you could be up here and spend this time. So that's neat for you to be able to come back and to bring your wife. What do you think of the
area? It's been a wonderful experience. Yeah. And he was so excited about coming back. And, of course, I was very excited because I heard these war stories. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting to see where he spent that time. It's really been a pleasure, and everybody's been so wonderful to us.
Now, you're here until when you go home?
Well, we're actually staying an extra day. The Elder Hostel ends on Friday, and we're going to stay an extra day.
Good.
Then we're going to go on a little tour of the rest of Alaska.
Oh, are you? So where do you go from here?
Well, we go back to Anchorage, and then we're joining a Gray Line tour, and we'll go up to Fairbanks, we'll look around up there, and then we'll come back by a dome train to Denali and to McKinley Village and be there a while, and then we'll come on further down to Anchorage, and then we're going to go by motor coach to Valdez and board a ship and look at some glaciers. And all this is not very long, but it sounds long.
Oh,
and
then, wonderful.
And then we're going back to Anchorage and then fly back to Alabama.
Yeah, and get there just as it's getting real hot.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
It will. Yes, it will be.
Well, the Elder Hostel people here have done an outstanding job. I must say this, that Jera and Amy. Oh, yes.
They do.
And the quality people were just
perfect. And then this facility here, this hotel. What do you think about that?
Unbelievable.
I know, isn't it?
Well, Barbara and John, they're just all of their people. And I know that we have many more interesting programs to come because we've got several more days.
Yes.
People are happy here, and I like to see that.
Yeah.
It's different from when I was here before.
Oh, yes.
We would look at a guy, and we'd see him, and say, well, he's been here a while. He has the Aleutian stare.
We still say that. March,
and a guy would come in and he says, oh, this is awful weather. I said, well, just wait a while. I said, it'll be different. It'll change.
Yes, it can always get worse. We've found
that. They say, well, where are the ladies? Where are the girls? I said, well, they're behind every tree.
Every tree.
The same
thing. Yeah, it's the same stories.
Well, they've been perpetuated.
Yes. Okay, well, thanks for spending this time with us, and we hope that the rest of the week is as pleasant as what this has been, and get out and meet more people and see more things, and we'll get you into the powerhouse. No problem there. So, okay, well, thanks again for being with us.
Well, thank you.
It's such a pleasure to meet you, and I hope to see you in Gulf Shores someday.
I anticipate that.
Yes.
Because we'll keep in touch.
Yes, we'll want to do that. Okay, thanks.
And this is Kay Deffendahl here for another segment of Eye on Alaska. Good night.